Before we begin today's show, we don't talk much about sports gambling on this podcast. Maybe we should, quite frankly. But if you're interested in making a little money in this upcoming NBA season, then I suggest you listen to my guy, Stanford Steve and the Bear, a weekly podcast devoted to making all the right picks to help you win some cash. Stanford Steve and the Bear. Download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Wednesday evening. Joining us from Los Angeles is the one, the only Kevin Arnovitz, brand new dog dad.
This is a thing, isn't it?
Well, I just thought I'd mention it in passing.
Yes.
He named his dog Howard, and I am a huge fan of naming dogs people names.
Hmm.
Big fan of that.
It was going to be, for a girl, it was either going to be Colleen or Denise.
I mean, tell me how many dogs out there are named Colleen. It's great. I just love it. Joining us from the Dallas area is the one, the only, thank God.
Whoa.
Tim Band McMahon.
Hello, Tim. I usually say howdy partners, but in honor of Jose Juan Barea, I'm going to say hola mi amigos.
J.J. Barea, one of the many stories you've written in today's news cycle, J.J. Barea being released by the Mavs, end of his career, you think?
He certainly hopes not. He feels great. He absolutely wants to play. And honestly, you know, I might be biased, but I definitely believe that he can help a team that needs veteran leadership and point guard depth.
Well, Mark Cuban gave him a guaranteed $2.5 million contract before cutting him. And that's a heck of a severance payment. We should all be so lucky.
I was going to say, I hope the ESPN bosses hear that and treat me the same way.
I wouldn't bet on it.
I bet you they'll fire me at some point, but not with a 2.6 million severance package.
They're going to fire all of us. So you've had a very interesting week, McMahon, out in front of a lot of this James Harden reporting. This is quite the quagmire. Obviously, it's not new that Harden has, doesn't want to be in Houston anymore. He has elected an interesting way of going about this. You're using the word holdout. I mean, he's
there now.
I guess you could say it was a holdout. He didn't show up for the first couple of days when he was supposed to be there. We have seen a lot of star players want out of their situations over the last decade. Mm-hmm. Some guys have handled it better than others. Look, let's all act like adults here. Certainly, if you are a fan of the Rockets or you're a fan of any of these teams where a star player wants out, it hurts. Mm-hmm. It hurt the Pelicans fans with Anthony Davis. It hurt, the Thunder fans with Russell Westbrook. We could go on, and Durant and what have you. It's not like this is unheard of, but I do not think James Harden is handling this in the best way. And he is absolutely your story, as I talked to league executives, your story from, 10, 15 days ago, where you quoted someone in the Rockets organization saying, we're fine with being uncomfortable.
Yeah, we're willing to get uncomfortable.
Every time there's an update from you and Woj, I have executives texting me, boy, still uncomfortable. Staying uncomfortable. And James Harden seems to have taken that to heart. This has obviously been a dicey story to cover over the last few days. McMahon, I'll yield to you and describe what it's been like. Haven't been able to be in Houston with the Rockets because of the COVID, but you've obviously been all over this story.
Yeah, I was closer to Houston than James Harden was when training camp opened. That's
fair.
That's for sure. And look, obviously, if James Harden doesn't want to be in Houston, he has the right to express that, to, you know, suggest strongly that perhaps they should look to move him. But man, to make a point to go party as publicly as possible in the middle of a pandemic, you know, no masks in sight, but, you know, first you're going to little baby's birthday party in Atlanta, then you're hanging out and, you know, all sorts of nocturnal establishments in Las Vegas. And
yeah, the fact that you are in Atlanta, you're not even in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Houston,
But not at the facility.
But not at the facility. Then he goes to Atlanta and then flies right by Houston over to Vegas. I mean, he's putting his finger in their eye.
Yeah, your geography's a little bit off, but I understand your point. There's no question.
He overshot Texas on his way to Nevada.
He's putting his finger in their eye, and I think we can all figure out which finger it is. And, you know, I just don't know that other than creating an absolute circus and, you know, perhaps responding to the challenge of uncomfortability, it didn't change anything. It's not like the Rocket said, oh, no, you know, James is making us all look like fools. We absolutely have to trade him now that he has, but he's, you know, with 2 guaranteed years left on his contract. Let us take a package from Brooklyn that we think is really bad value. So that's not going to happen. Honestly, the guy I feel sorry for is Steven Silas. He works his entire life to become a head coach, and he basically has to sit up there and admit, well, I have no idea what's going on with James because the guy won't even give me the time of day.
Yeah, he actually made me smile. Probably didn't make him smile, but he used a quote on day like 4 or 5 of this mess where he said, well, it's the NBA. Not everything is going to be all roses. And it made me smile because his father, who I covered as a head coach, used to say that regularly. He would say, ain't nothing in the NBA going to be a bed of roses. And so it just made me smile that he was using one of his dad's phrases. But as you said to me when I was happy to hear that quote, you said it's not only is it not roses, it's all thorns for him.
Yeah, all the thorns, none of the petals.
And this is the nature of being a head coach. During these types of situations, the head coach has to be in front of the cameras every day, the front office. Although Tillman Fertitta is still giving interviews. He was on CNBC.
Well, he's got his weekly CNBC appearance. He has to, you know, listen.
Which he didn't really reveal anything on his CNBC appearance this week, but at least he was on television answering questions about James Harden. It wasn't much of an answer. He basically said, James Harden wants to win a ring. I hope it's with the Rockets. That's essentially what he said. Kevin, you've been around a long enough time to see these things play out. Everyone's end game is transparent here. Harden is trying to make the Rockets trade him now, and the Rockets are standing up to him. We have seen stuff like this happen before, but not quite in this vein where, you know, there's the whole pandemic thing and he's out partying. What do you think is the next stage of what's going to happen here?
I mean, Tim's right. That's the funny thing about this whole saga. The raw facts are the same as they were a week, 12 days, 14 days ago. This is a guy who doesn't want to be here. And he has identified places he would rather be. I mean, it's in the middle, though, it's a fascinating situation, right? Like, there are three issues, right? The first is, we'll call it teammate, Rocket, and NBA citizen, right? And that is, yeah, man, like, your team's getting ready for camp. You got a new coach, like, kind of a pick your male anatomy move here, you know, like it's just, it's a, I don't want to say bad look. It's actually bad behavior within the context of being an NBA and a Rockets leader, NBA citizen, et cetera. Then you have kind of the,
being an American citizen. Pandemic. Yeah.
That is number two, right? Irrespective of whether or not you think the Rockets deserve or Steven Silas deserves a measure of class, there is the, hey, you're an influential person in the culture and you're partying without a mask in like very close quarters. Like, you know, it has been a struggle for there to be consensus in this country about just general behavior about how to protect one another. And like, he's kind of flouting it. Right. And then there's the realpolitik. And look, you can't begrudge Harden anything. He has the power in the situation. There are about 5 people on the planet Earth who can play basketball at the level James Harden can play it. And if he wishes to spend his time in, as you say, nocturnal venues, then so be it. And if he would like to be out of there and would like to stick whatever digit in the eyes of whomever, that is well within the boundaries. What's interesting, Brian and Tim, is like the goalpost keeps getting moved. It used to be, I had 1 year left, Garrett, you know, before the option. And so I'm going to let the team know and maybe they can deal me because they'll get something for it. Then you kind of had the trade deadline in year one minus 1.5, right? And then now it's like T minus 2 full seasons. Like, at what point are we in a league where I don't care if a guy is in year one or it's trade deadline of 2 of 5. He basically says, get me out of here. Like, are that's we, right. I mean, that's to me, the interesting point is, are we going to get to a league where contract schmontrack, like you don't, yeah, you technically control the player. Like, that's language I've never been particularly comfortable with, but actually the player is well within his boundaries to sort of demand a trade and, you know, very well could humiliate the franchise if you don't see to that.
Well, I mean, this is one of these things. The talent, the contract is over when the talent says that it's over.
Exactly.
This has been true in entertainment businesses for a long time. What I would say, by the way, real quick, McMahon, you reported today that so over the last weekend, the NBA came out with new rules for players about what they could do off the court. And specifically, they said you cannot go to nightclubs, mm-hmm. you cannot go to casinos, and you can really not go to restaurants unless they're on some list, which will be forthcoming. Probably in road cities, there's going to be some restaurants that they're going to identify.
Right. Ryan, I have never been more excited for a press release, and I cannot wait for this list. I'm fascinated to see what the league with the players.
I wonder if it's even going to be published. But so let me ask you this, McMahon: So Harden violated that new rule within 24 hours because
he used that COVID, that 150 whatever page COVID protocol manual as toilet paper.
Okay.
Or
so let me ask
paper.
You this. So the NBA said that there could be fines or suspensions for violating those rules.
I've checked and to this point there's, you know, the NBA has shown no inclination to discipline.
So here's my question. You reported today that he now has to go through 6 days of negative tests.
Right. And that started Tuesday. So he's
Is that his quote unquote punishment that he has to be out for 6 days instead of three? It's three, right?
Yeah. And I mean, look, the fact that he was.
Because that's not a punishment if it's like.
Right. You know what it reminds me of? You know, an election, the little sister, like they expel her and she's thrilled. Like punishment if she's riding her bike around Omaha,
keep me out longer.
Yeah.
You know, please don't make me go back. So
how about a 12-day quarantine, right? Like,
I mean, in Adam Silver's NBA, disciplinary fines have essentially been eviscerated. You pretty much got to really throw a punch to get fined in the NBA. Adam, and it's not just during the pandemic. And, you know, Adam Silver has just disciplined for players. And I'm not to be misinterpret here, but sort of like petty offenses, like, you know, guys get away with stuff all the time. Just Adam Silver is just, I mean, he is the complete opposite of David Stern when it comes to this, you know, guys pretty much get away with whatever they want. And right. So here we have an important thing. It gets tested by a player within 24 hours and the league's like, whatever.
Absolutely. And, you know, maybe it's different if guys are flaunting it like this during the regular season. We'll see. But, I mean, Harden absolutely made a mockery about it, of the whole thing. He's going to sit 6 days, like you guys said. I don't think he's necessarily disappointed with that. But, the other thing is, I got the sense that the NBA, and more than the sense, look, I asked when he reported, I obviously started trying to find out, okay, when would he possibly be cleared to practice? What exactly is the protocol here, given that he was obviously putting himself at major COVID risk during his little holdout? And by the way, you say I use that term.
Maybe he was and maybe he wasn't.
Well, listen, I know what you're saying. Okay.
I'll just leave it at that.
I'm just going to leave it. Okay. I hear what you're saying. Whatever. So, Steven Silas.
Either way, he's flagrantly violating the rule, which was just negotiated with the union.
Yeah, Steven Silas today, a day after Harden came back and started the testing protocol at the Toyota Center, is asked, hey, when might he be able to practice? And Steven's basically said, I don't know. We're waiting on word from the NBA. We're trying to figure it out. We're eager to find out, basically.
I mean, this is just like with Lou Williams, where the NBA just thought about it for a day and said, okay, 10 days.
Right.
You know, is it like some court of...
Yes, it's a figured out as they go along type of situation. And certainly this is not one a lot like the old Magic City Lou. A lot of similarities there. not one that not a situation the NBA was eager to have to figure out, but you know, it was kind of just thrown in their lap, so to speak. And you know, they came up with the 6 consecutive tests.
Okay. So let's talk about what we think the Rockets, how the Rockets should proceed here. Because one of the things that I've, in talking to other executives, and they are watching this story very closely, as you can imagine, and really out of like an interest, like over the last few days, like I've had sort of robust conversations with general managers and other people in the league who are like, okay, well, what can they do? What are their options here? But one of the things that a guy brought up to me today is part of this a result of the culture that the Rockets had over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years with their Amore, where they basically let Harden do everything. And, you know, he rewarded them with spectacular play. And it's not like this is an unheard of arrangement. And now that there's sort of new sheriffs in town that are pushing back and not acquiescing to him, is this just a result of the way the Rockets set the standard for what James Harden could get away with? And sort of the chickens are coming home to roost. And, you know, there is a line to draw in the sand. Kevin just referred to, like, you know, what do you do with a talented player like this? But is this just the Rockets, you know, saying, hey, listen, you are being paid $41 million. You're going to have to be held to a standard here. And can that toothpaste be put back in the tube in any way?
I mean, I think this is one of the most interesting questions in the NBA, and in some ways it's been spiraling not just around James Harden, right? Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. To what extent should superstars demands, and by the way, sometimes very rightful demands. I mean, these are the guys doing the heavy lifting. The Houston Rockets are nowhere without James Harden. The Clippers are nowhere last season, irrespective of the disappointment, right? But what do you do? It's one of the reasons, you know, and you've written about it a bunch of times, Brian, about, you know, Jimmy Butler and the perfect match in Miami, right? Is the greatest question. It's, we talked about this. You've written about this about vis-a-vis LeBron. First stint in Cleveland, first stint in Miami. In some ways, his decision to go back to Cleveland was an expression of, you know what, in Miami, I might not have the sort of privileges I ideally would want. And so with Harden, yeah, how permissive can you be as an organization, when you have one of the 5 or 10 best talents in the league? What you hope is you get a guy like Steph Curry, right? Where the demands are pretty simple. The question be, and sometimes, you know, Harden's a different case than Kawhi. You know, Kawhi's, you're not going to find Kawhi in a club. You know what I mean? Like, the guy does his work. He does have a lot of quirky.
Well, you are going to find Kawhi in a club.
No, I'm saying not this week. That's what I meant. Okay. No, I mean, you can find Kawhi in a club. I'm saying, like, at the appropriate time.
He has been
time.
Found, in fact.
Yes, but I'm saying not in the the week, you know, where training camp starts. So I just think with Harden, I mean, perhaps it's chickens home to roost. Sometimes, and I wrote this last year, the superstar is the culture. Is that Daryl's fault? To some extent, probably. But James is James, right? Like, I mean, you can tell James, look, stop spending $35,000 a pop in nocturnal establishments.
Well, I don't even, you know, he can spend whatever he wants. It's just like, Tim, did you not report John, the John Wall had a conversation with James Harden?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, John Wall, I forget reporting. John Wall said it.
Right.
John Wall said it. But, and
what
look,
did John Wall say?
Basically, that he was talking to James Harden before the trade. They agreed they wanted to play with each other. Look, James Harden has had the right to say who comes and goes in Houston essentially for the whole time he's there. He wanted Dwight Howard, and then he wanted Dwight Howard gone. You know, Chris Paul, then Chris Paul gone. Russell Westbrook gone. He wanted Kevin McHale out. McHale was gone. I mean, we can go on down the list. He had and like a lot of superstars, he had the right to say what the travel schedule was going to be. He determined the practice schedule. Got a couple days off. Well, James wants to go to Vegas, so you're not going to practice that day. You know, no practice that day. Coming back from the All-Star break, first practice is voluntary because James needs it. You know, he needs to go cool his heels a little bit in Vegas. The first time the Rockets ever told James Harden no was, no, we're not going to send you to Brooklyn when we don't like the potential trade.
That's what I'm saying. This is not, I mean, in addition to the fact that the Rockets window probably has set here for championship window, I guess I don't know. This is the organization changing gears on him.
Their culture was whatever James, whatever whim he had, that was what their culture was based on. And, I was talking to a former Rockets staffer yesterday, and he said, quote, yeah, he's going to act up. He's never heard no before.
Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Here's where I think the issue is. Kevin, I don't think that there is a trade to be made for James Harden right now. We could spend a half hour here. Like I could say to you, boy, I could see the Cleveland Cavaliers trying to get James Harden. I could see the Orlando Magic trying to get James Harden. Like we could go through that exercise if you would like, but there isn't a good trade right now. And especially because the Rockets, from what I understand, and I mean, it's not like they're having mass talks, but the Rockets have a very, very high standard. They would like a star player back in return.
A young franchise cornerstone and a bundle of picks / talent on rookie contracts.
Those trades don't happen. If you look at the star players who have been traded in recent years, if you're talking about,
I'm going to argue with you on that one. That trade happened for Anthony Davis. Brandon Ingram is a young franchise cornerstone.
Well, he wasn't a franchise cornerstone when they traded for him.
Okay, that's fine.
I mean, he was a prospect who blossomed.
Okay.
It was a really good acquisition.
Okay. Well, let's just be clear.
Let's just be clear. We're talking in circles. We're talking about Ben Simmons. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. But Ben Simmons for James Harden is not a deal that is available today.
Correct. And they have not even, like, there's not talks happening. Harden would be willing to go to Philly and other contenders. Specifically,
well,
contenders. I'm not sure who's on the list.
Let me ask you about that. Okay. One thing at a time, if you don't mind.
Oh, sorry.
Your
show, even though you can't grow a beard.
The trade that they would like to make would be for Ben Simmons, okay? There isn't a player in Brooklyn who fits that description. Do we agree with that?
Yeah.
Kyrie and Durant.
If LeVert didn't have the red flags, he's an interesting, I mean, he's older than Ingram ever was then, but he's interesting, but you're right. That's not a guy you can just insert pure shot creation.
So you're looking at, like, if you're going to make, but by the way, they didn't just get Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball. They got three first round picks.
And Josh Hart's.
One of which was the number four pick.
Yeah.
And one of which was the number four pick. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a draft heavy trade. So if you're going to make a trade to get an all-star back, you're not getting the grand tour of draft picks. You're not getting the Drew Holiday package, the Anthony Davis package, the Paul George package. I just don't think you are. So, but my point is that for the Rockets to really have a chance to make any kind of a deal, they're probably going to have to get James Harden in and play with him for a while and see how a situation develops.
That's absolutely their plan.
Okay.
Also, because
that's why how they handle this with how what they're going to tell him is so important.
And then here's the other issue, and it's sort of a game theory question. So on one hand, if you deal Harden now to a desired team, that team gets two whole guaranteed years. Right? Well, it's the old Chris
unless,
Paul, right?
Unless you say, Jay, we will give you the grand tour. We'll give you all of our young players and all of our draft picks. We'll give you the Lakers package. But James Harden has to sign an extension.
Right, this is the Chris Paul 2011 deal, right?
That's right.
So now, do we think that the deal will be less? If let's say Philly does want to come to the table, let's for argument's sake, and at the deadline, or next offseason, do we think the deal is any less rich because they're only paying for one season, or the fact that James is willing to extend there renders it fine? Like, look, the deal's not going to be any worse at this trade deadline. It's not going to be any worse next offseason. It might not even be any worse at the trade deadline in his final guarantee.
There is one other option you could go to, which is I talked with the executive yesterday, and they said if Houston couldn't, and this isn't a deal you would do today, okay, to be clear, would be that you could say, all right, maybe we can't get the ideal package for James Harden. You have to take John Wall in addition to Harden.
Or Gordon. I mean, what about Gordon's another one that you wouldn't mind? Yeah.
Okay, or Gordon. You've got to help us. You've got to help us kick the ball down the field on our rebuild. I mean, you're not going to do it for free, but maybe the ask back changes a little bit if you can get off one of those contracts.
By the way, that's 15-8. Forget Wall. If just Harden and Gordon, you're sending $58 million.
Well, I know that. I mean, there's one team that could do it. I mean, there's probably more than one team that could do it, but there's one team that is in position to do it.
You're talking about the Knicks?
That's right.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying that's like a viable option. Right. I'm just saying, like, if you got to the point where you needed to do something and you were looking for another way to make a deal to help your organization, you could say, all right, well, if we can't get that star player, maybe we can, you know, get out of this jail a little bit.
Yeah. And look, at this point, the Rockets still aren't willing to whisper, you know, that the relationship is unsalvageable. Although we all understand what's happening here, there is an understanding that basically time is on their side in terms of leverage up until this trade deadline. And then after this deadline, when he has 1 year left, you know, time is no longer on their side. Unless, you know, the situation you say where Harden is willing to play ball. But then obviously he's only willing to play ball if it's a, you know, very select handpicked type of situation. If you talk to people in Philly, if you talk to people in Houston, they just want to say there hadn't been any talks, and that's fine. If you made me put down money on what ends up happening, that's still where my dollar's going.
I agree. So the difficulty with Harden is not just the squishiness of the contract, which is, you know, he's only got 2 years left, which is not nothing, but not, you know, it's not, you know, when the Lakers traded for Anthony Davis, they pretty much knew it wasn't for 1 year. Okay. The thing is, when you trade for James Harden, you are trading for more than just a star player with the contract squishiness. You are trading for a guy who maybe expects this kind of influence on an organization. You're trading for a guy whose style of play is not in a fit with anything else anybody else does.
Ryan, let me throw the big one out there. You're trading for a guy who at the age of 33 is going to want a 4 or 5 year deal that is going to burden your spreadsheet.
Well, that's why you want to do an extension. You don't want, you know, you want, you don't want to do a 4 year deal.
Right. But even then, like, here's the question. Is he a value positive player at age 34 or 35? He might be. I don't know how he's going to age. And by the way, we're not even considering all the questions you just asked, which is he a kind of a culture positive player? But like, let's look at it from the Brooklyn and Philly side. What would you give up for James Harden? How badly do you really want James Harden? Now, for 2 years, it makes a lot of sense. And then having to pay this guy at the back end of his career, one of these just absolutely crippling contracts that we see and we kind of roll our eyes when the guy gets to be, you know, on the list of worst, like, it's very reasonable to think that if Harden gets a max contract or extension, doesn't matter, that the 35-year-old James Harden is going to have one of the five worst contracts.
Well, this is the thing. Like people, some people have mentioned the Denver Nuggets as an option here. Let's just ask a simple question. Who would you rather have? Would you rather have Jamal Murray or would you rather have James Harden? Now, James Harden is a better player, but Jamal Murray costs $16 million less.
Okay.
And is in terrific, really has a great relationship with your franchise player.
Yeah, Jamal Murray is off the table. But if I'm Denver and I decide I want James Harden, I'm going to say, okay, Michael Porter Jr., Gary Harris, Will Barton, you know, the Rockets are going to ask for some.
And the draft picks. And
yeah, the Rockets are going to have to draft. But that would be.
How can Jamal Murray and James Harden play together?
I mean, Harden won 67 games with Chris Paul. What do you mean he can't play with another lead guard? Listen, for a year it did. The other thing that you're not saying here is, you know, when we're talking about the risk of Harden either on an extension or with another long-term max deal at age 33, there are absolutely concerns about how Harden is going to age based in part on lifestyle, and his happy birthday little baby holdout tour did not exactly diminish those concerns.
Yeah, I mean, look, I would never say I wouldn't want James Harden on my 2021 or even 21-22 team. It's just not a commitment. Like, that's the irony, is everyone's talking about, oh, well, no team's going to trade for him unless they know they can get, you know, him long term. I don't want him at age 33 and 34 making $50 million a year. Wants that deal?
That's why the deal is Philadelphia, okay? Because the guy who he's got the relationship with, who he let run the whole operation, Daryl Morey, is there. That's number one. Number two, right now, Philly has changed their roster, and Embiid and Simmons are at the moment turning over a new leaf to try to play together, and there's going to be a new system. We have a new coach, and they feel like they're going to try it. Maybe it will work. Some people believe that it can still work. There's, Bontemps, who's, you know, covered that team very closely for the last few years, has lineup data that shows a couple of years ago that they actually were functional together. But there are people who believe that that will run its course, and that by February, they will say it's still a problem, even with the new coach and the new roster that spreads the floor a little bit more, and there will be at a loggerheads there, and then all of a sudden things could change. Now, I can't see the future. I didn't think that Harden.
What's a loggerhead? Is that like a fan of beer?
It's two guys bouncing into each other's heads, and one of us has got to go. There are people who believe that will happen, but you know, I've been around long enough to know that things happen in the NBA that you can't predict. So maybe it does work. But if you're doing, to use Kevin's point, if you're doing game theory here, the Rockets probably their best option, if the guy that they want is Ben Simmons, is to wait this out.
Right. Not to go too far down the rabbit hole. If I'm the Philadelphia 76ers and I'm willing to deal Ben Simmons, how do I know that two more years of James Harden at $40 gazillion plus the opportunity to overspend on him is the best thing I can get? If I want to trade Ben Simmons, I'm not like saying, oh, I'm going to trade Ben Simmons for Harden. I'm going to ask 28 other teams, what would you give for Ben Simmons? And I tell you what, I guarantee you, one of those 28 other teams will have a more attractive offer. Because James Harden, and I still think he's a top five player. This is not impugning James Harden. I just don't, like, if I'm going to trade Ben Simmons, I'm going to canvass the league. Who says that James Harden, a year and a half of James Harden,
and
is the best
thing
I can get?
You know, Daryl pulled the ripcord and got out of there, maybe because he knew that this was as far as it could happen.
Listen, I think your cause and effect is out of whack there. Daryl pulled the ripcord because he knew Harden was going to pull the ripcord. Oh, you want to jump off the plane? Not till I go first.
Okay. But, you know, Kevin makes a good point.
It's a fair point. I also, obviously Daryl Morey has seen a lot of James Harden up close and personal and, you know, done a lot of James Harden as the best player in basketball type of talk. I truly believe that he at least is closer to believing that than not, you know, I would say best other than LeBron is what he really believes. And listen, the other thing, like, I don't know how long your window is of Joel Embiid's prime, just because, you know, big guy with injury issues, whatever. I do think that James Harden absolutely significantly raises their ceilings and increases their odds of winning a title in the what 3 to 4 year window that that he's still going to be
an
MVP candidate.
And Daryl's number one priority in his career, even though he gets so much credit for analytics and so much credit for arbitrage trades and so much credit for creative contracts, Daryl Morey has and always will be about stars.
Yeah.
About superstars. He is no different than Red Auerbach in that regard.
Right. But to go back to the other thing, Morey's about stars because he subscribes to the theory that the stars are the most underpaid players in basketball. And they are, right? Like, in their prime. Like, it's not that, Daryl Morey's a star screwer, right? Like, it's, there's a salary cap in this league, which means that LeBron James, by value in production, should make $100 million, but the league conspires to pay him less than half of that. Steph Curry in his prime, and we can go down the list. Morey is into stars insofar as they represent a greater value than their contracts. If James, and I agree with Tim here, I think James probably provides you more than what is he making this year? $41 million in value this year. I agree. So if Daryl's priority is this season, yeah, James, he's into James Harden because James Harden provides more than $41 million in value. Is he going to provide more than 44 next season? Yeah, maybe. I'll tell you what, I'm guessing that Daryl runs the numbers, and I'm not sure he produces 50, 51, whatever the hell the number is going to be in 2023. And so that's why he's into stars. It's not that, stars are fun. It's stars are underpaid.
Well, speaking of superstars, the Houston Rockets got Hakeem Olajuwon in 1984, 1983?
The Jordan draft.
Okay, 83.
80, whatever. Sure. That year, the Jordan draft.
I'm showing my ignorance. It took them another 20. I mean, Yao was a great player, but he was not Hakeem. It took them another 20 whatever years, almost 30 years, to get another player of that caliber. You trade away James Harden, maybe hit the lottery in a couple of years. Better be careful because, the Thunder own your draft position.
Yeah, those protections might matter.
Which, by the way, it's interesting that trade is so interesting because the Thunder backload, the Thunder, when they made the deal, figured that Westbrook and Harden were going to be, good for a few years, and they backloaded it and they got the swaps and the picks in 24, 25, and 26. But they got a swap in 21. Just as like a little insurance policy. And so you may say, well, what is a pick? It's top four protected. So if the Rockets get in the lottery, win one of the lottery slots, they'd be able to keep it. But no, so you'd say, well, the Thunder are rebuilding. What value is that? And the Thunder are probably going to maybe have the fifth pick. What are they going to swap it with? Well, the Thunder set up the trade so that they can swap their pick or the Miami Heat pick that they have. So that little aspect of the trade where they built in a 2021 swap right could be pretty good. But what I'm just saying here is, like, you trade, and this is another reason why this is such a massive moment for Raphael Stone, who's the new general manager. The reality is you may go another 20 years before you get a player like James Harden. Now, in the case of the Pelicans, they had karma or luck or whatever you want to say. Anthony Davis goes, they win the lottery, and they get a player. Maybe Zion becomes a superstar. Maybe he doesn't. But they got the black swan moment, and so their situation is a little bit different. But, this is the reality. This is who Giannis, who we're going to talk about in a minute here. I've talked about this. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar walks out the door in 1974, says, I'd like to leave. The Bucks have gone 46 years and haven't been back to the finals. You send away a guy like James Harden, it could be a long time before you get a guy like James Harden back. And that's why we can sit here and talk about it and try to get the trade machine going and do all this stuff. This is a gigantic freaking moment for your franchise. Gigantic. And you're asking somebody who's never executed a trade like this to do it. And you're asking him to do it under duress and very, very publicly. It's hard, man. It's really, really hard.
Hey, and he got John Wall back for Russell Westbrook.
And I hate to put it like this to the Rocket fans, but like, you know, Houston has been a hub of the NBA since they got Harden. And because of McGrady and because of Yao, they've generally been a hub for a long time. Ask the Phoenix Suns how fleeting this can be. Ask the Phoenix Suns, okay? Ask the Minnesota Timberwolves. They lost Garnett. How's life been since then? Is it going to, you know, they haven't had Garnett since 2008. They've missed the playoffs 15 of 16 years. When are they getting another Garnett? And that's why this is really serious business.
Yeah, and they got Karl Anthony Towns. They got, you know, and Wiggins. They got the number one overall picks, right? And they still, right. To your point, right. They still haven't gotten as good as Towns is. It ain't that deep. I mean, when you're talking about a perennial MVP candidate kind of guy, there's only, you know, we can argue what, four, maybe six players that you would consider at that level in the league. So 80% of the league's not going to have that.
This is why I was at Loggerheads. You like that?
Yeah.
This is why I was at Loggerheads with Dan Gilbert when he traded Kyrie Irving for a draft pick. He traded Kyrie Irving for a draft pick because, like he said, I can't let LeBron James walk out the door for without protection again. And he won't extend his contract. And so I've got to protect this organization. I'm trading him for this unprotected pick from Brooklyn, which they thought was going to be a top three pick, but ended up being eight. All right. And my point was, when LeBron James walks out the door, gentlemen, whether that's in a year or two or 15 minutes, that's it. It could be 40 years before you see anything like this again. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
So today, Giannis, after a week and a half, speaks to the media for the first time. He knows he's going to get asked about his contract. And Kevin, his answers were not good. They were very limp. He said, I'm not focusing on my contract. I'm focusing on myself. What the hell does that mean, Kevin? I don't know where to go with this, but I would not have taken that as a sign that he's signing in this next 2 weeks.
Yeah, so let's take the range of possibilities. We'll start with optimism. The deal isn't done. It might very well be en route to getting done, but it's not done. And so what is Giannis supposed to say, right? So, we're working on the deal. It's going to be done. Boom. Oh, but I mean, you imagine the pandemonium and hysteria that happens when Giannis all but rubber stamps, I'm coming back to Milwaukee. Probably a bad move before the ink is dry, even if they're just working out some small details. As we all know, the number is the number. So what the hell is he supposed to say, right? That would be the optimistic thing. Hey, I'm working on my game. That's what athletes do, right? Like, I'm not worried about the contract. My agent's dealing with that. You know, I'm working on getting better. That's why I'm in this position. I'm in good humor about Chris's gift, you know, whatever it is. Okay, the pessimistic is your response, right? Which is, does not sound good. If it were going to be a deal, there would have been a deal by now, right? That is the negative.
Not necessarily.
Right. Okay. So my point is you might be, your expression might be a little pessimistic. Like, all right, let me ask you a question, Brian. Let's say for argument's sake, they're on target. You know, nobody's in a hurry. They're going to get it done by the 21st or soon after or whatever.
No, you're Giannis. Right.
You're all right. So you have the 21st, the deadline. You're Giannis. What do you say today when the deal's not done? You've got nearly 2 weeks left. What do you say to that question? Play comms director for a second.
Okay, that's a good thing. I think I would say, you know, guys, it's a really big decision. I know that it's important. I know that it's something that my teammates are thinking about and the organization is thinking about. And of course, the fans are thinking about. And it's a really important decision. And it's something that I've spent a lot of time thinking about. And my agent and I are still considering it. And what's most important to me as I come here to work every single day is to try to get this team ready for this season, because this season is really what's most important, more important than the next 5 or 6 years. This season is important.
I'm really optimistic about this team. And
yes,
you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's you're good at this. You're good at the spinning.
I just think that he knew that what he said today was going to set the tone. And it was not a strong statement. And I think it goes back to, if he does not sign, which, you know, in a vacuum, which I was saying last spring and over the summer, in a vacuum, he probably should not sign. And that is not a commentary on the city of Milwaukee or the Bucks organization or his teammates or wherever else he would, any other team that he would want to go to. He can sign the exact same contract next summer as he can now. By signing now, he essentially gives away that optionality for free. Mm-hmm. What he would do if he signed now would be to give this season the best chance of success. And that is not nothing. And so if he truly believes in this, that is what you would do. But in a vacuum, the cold advice would probably be not to sign it. Having said that, the Bucks organization for a while was very confident that he was going to sign it. And I don't think that they made that up out of whole cloth.
Was that pre or post Bogdan blow up?
Kevin?
I mean, I still think there was a strong degree of confidence, Bogdan or no Bogdan. I mean, I think on the New York Times election probability meter, yeah, I think there was a tick, you know, toward the negative, but I don't think it was substantial, at least in the frame of mind of the organization. I think the organization, and you know, it really believes there is a visceral connection between this young guy, the franchise, in the city that actually transcends even the personnel that's there, be it coach, GM, owner, that just, even though, because look, it's a different owner, it's a different coach, it's a different front office, that the sheer Milwaukee Bucks name as a, not a brand, because I don't think he cares about sort of, you know, the market features of the Milwaukee Bucks, but this is where he's grown up. He was raised as a Milwaukee Buck in a way that other players aren't necessarily, given, you know, life story and work ethic and just his filial focus and everything else. So but I think there was still a lot of confidence in the week following the blow up. It might have been reduced by 5 to 10%, but I still think it was very, very strong.
There are a lot of my kind of loggerheads in Milwaukee, though.
Yes.
And look, he could still sign it. He could still sign it. I'm just saying that.
I will say this. The whole, I let my agent handle those talks. Like, what talks? Like, there's the Supermax, and you can sign it, or you cannot sign it. It's not like there's negotiations back and forth.
There is another option he has. It wouldn't make a lot of financial sense. He doesn't have to sign the Supermax. He could sign a standard extension, you know, probably for 2 years. He would be leaving Supermax money on the table. That wouldn't make sense, but that would be a way to commit to the franchise without committing for 6 years. But that, I think I should mention that at least as an option. And he wouldn't have to do that by December 21st.
You know, it's funny. It almost comes full circle to where we started this conversation. Let's say he commits for 6 years and he wants out after two. What happens?
Well, to me, that's, if I were the Bucks, that's the offer I would make to him. I would say, Giannis, sign for the 6 years. He'd basically sign for five, and then you have the year he's got left on his contract. So it becomes a 6 year contract. But you would say, Giannis, get the $80 million extra that we can guarantee you, and let's work together. And if something happens in a couple of years and you're not happy, come to us and let's figure something out. That way we're protected and you're protected. You would never broadcast that, but that's the way business is done in the NBA. And now maybe, let me just ask you this, Kevin. Do you think Giannis, knowing him and knowing that organization, do you think Giannis will be able to thrive this year in an environment where he does not sign this extension?
I think he is more suited to that indecision and that overall uncertainty than most stars are. He's not an optics guy. I mean, it's funny. I thought your comms director crafted spin statement was beautiful. I don't know that Giannis approaches a question at a press conference with a lot of intentionality. And by the way, that's not a criticism. I just don't think he thinks about it. I don't think he's back there with, you know, the brass or whoever runs the media relations at the agency or whatever else. Like, I don't think this guy is crafting message. I don't think this guy is brand conscious in that respect. I think the environment would be better for, you know, his teammates probably. In fact, I would say there might be teammates who have a harder time with it than Giannis himself. But I just think his obsessiveness sort of lends itself to, he can probably thrive in an indecision environment greater than 85% of top 10 players. LeBron James obviously is an indecision environment every this year, right? Like, that guy is in a one-in-one situation every year. And like, he's
not anymore.
He's a Martian. Right. Actually, that's the thing.
You think he lacks the desire and or ability to be full of crap is basically what you're saying.
No, I don't think, oh, he's this blunt guy, he's unfiltered. Like, I just, by the way, this is a guy who you sit with 5 years ago at a table, had very rudimentary English. Like this is, it's not why he got into this business. You know what I mean? Like, one thing that someone really close to him told me is, you know, why hasn't he kind of been more brand conscious? And he said, it's very easy, Kevin. He finds it completely unseemly to ever front himself as a face of the league if he hasn't won a championship, right? And I just think that's an interesting tell. So I'm probably less pessimistic than you are, Brian, if I'm a Milwaukee Bucks fan today, not because I think this is great news. I would have preferred that he had signed it if I'm a member of the Bucks front office or a fan. But I also think that, like,
well, he still he's might,
not,
again,
he's not
he's
a guy
still
who sculpts
very
a
well might sign it. I just, yeah. I, that commentary today did not increase my feeling that he would. I was closer to he was signing it before this comment.
Right,
and
so
you know
where did you go from the Nate Cohn meter? I like this.
Well, you know, this is kind of like, sometimes I compare things that happen in the NBA to poker, because I think the NBA a lot of times is very much like poker, because you have a hand and you can have a very strong hand and it can just get beat. And it doesn't mean that you played it badly or whatever, you know, just things happen. The Clippers had a very strong hand last year, and it got cracked. So they're going to try to run the hand again. Sometimes when you're in a hand in poker, you can say things to your opponent that change the dynamic of the hand. You can talk your way in and out of things and different things. And you wouldn't think that, right? Because it's ultimately the cards. But I've seen it happen many times where someone has talked their way into or out of a situation with simple language. And so this is what I'm looking at here. The words that he said today changed my judgment of his whole cards that are turned down. And doesn't mean that I'm reading it right, but it changed my judgment of it. You don't know where to go with that, do you?
You come up with some of the best analogies.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's a final word. He's just dropped the mic.
I mean, you know, you don't know, you know, there's certain things that you just don't know. Like, I'd like to be able to tell you, oh, yes, I am talking to Giannis on text every night. I know exactly what he's thinking. Sometimes in this business, in media, you have really good sourcing and you're really close to things and you have a really good feel of what's going on. There's stuff, as you guys know, there's stuff that we know about. We know right now about significant NBA news that is going to probably happen in the short-term future that is going to alter things, but we can't talk about it for various reasons. Sometimes you have information, sometimes you don't. In this particular case, I don't know how Giannis is feeling. And he's been in Greece, and he hasn't shown at all. I don't see any tells. Mm-hmm. I only know what I was feeling off of the Bucks. And his first, you know, give out of information made me pull back a little bit. So we'll see. It doesn't mean that I'm folding the bet. I just think that, he had a long time, months, to come up with what he was going to say at his first media session today. And what LeBron James said in 2009, when he, you know, the 2000, you know, and this is part of my issue with Giannis, and maybe I should, maybe I just have to acknowledge this. The way I look at the situation is framed because I lived through every single day of the LeBron James 2009-10 season. And I know how LeBron handled it, and I know how the Cavs handled it, and I know how it turned out. And obviously, LeBron and Giannis are not the same person. They have completely different frames of reference, completely different sets of priorities, but it frames how I look at it. And the way LeBron handled that season, his verbiage and the way he handled the discussion in October and November of that year kept the Cavs were nervous every single day, but it didn't affect the team every single day. And they won 60 games and they were the number one overall seed. They were not a championship team, but he was able with verbiage to remove some of the pressure. That did not happen in Giannis's first session. We'll see if something changes in the short-term future, but I didn't love it from the Bucks standpoint.
Listen, there's teams we've discussed before, the work done by teams this offseason that are interested in Giannis certainly indicates that they're pessimistic from the Bucks standpoint.
To use the poker analogy, the Mavericks and Raptors and Heat anteed up and stayed in the hand.
Right.
They in full.
Yeah. And, you know, whether that means they knew something, they're guessing, or just.
I don't think. I don't think they knew anything.
The thing is, maybe it's just, you know what? If there's a 2% chance you can get a player like Giannis in his prime, then you go all in on that 2% because that's how much of a franchise elevator he can be.
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin has a good feel for the Bucks. He knows how much work the Bucks have put into this. They've got a really good team.
Yes, they do.
They've got a really good team. I don't know if it's a championship team, but it's a really, really good team. And they're gonna have a lot of really good nights this season. And they're gonna look really good.
Will they be in the playoffs?
Will they be in the playoffs? They'll be in the playoffs.
No, will they have good nights in the playoffs?
That's the thing. That's what happened with that Cavs team, man. I'm gonna McMahon, you're gonna have to check me on this because I like the same that Cavs team was a great team, but they were not built to win a championship. You know, and my head defaults back there, you know. And I remember
the Bucks have been great the last couple of years. In the regular season.
I remember the third day of practice in 2009, Jay-Z's New York State of Mind had just come out and it got to the time of practice where the official stuff was over and it was time for the players to, they could shoot around and LeBron had control of the iPod that day. I did think they rotated and he went over and the first song he put on was New York State of Mind. And that became a freaking story.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm not sure that the Bucks would be covered that way. And in fact, in this COVID season where we don't have as much access to teams, maybe it wouldn't be. But it's going to be like that. Just because, and it's a compliment to him more than anything. It's because that's how great of a player he is. But, you know, I submit that the most relevant thing that's happened in the Bucks organization since they lost the 1974 finals in 7 games to the Boston Celtics was when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said, I need to be traded. And that Giannis signing this extension would be the greatest thing that's happened since then. And I know that that's crazy because you say, wait a minute, they've had 45 seasons and they've had, you know, Ray Allen and you know, Sidney Moncrief. Who else have they had?
Brandon Marquise Jennings, Johnson. 55-point game as a rookie. Right.
You know, they've been to the conference finals a few times.
I actually watched that in a Wisconsin sports
Jack bar. Sikma. Alton Lister.
Yeah. For a mid-market, small market team like Milwaukee.
Randy Brewer.
Him, the two-time MVP recommitting and giving them years of his prime would be I would say it's the biggest thing since Kareem in the 74 finals. That's just the way I see it. And
yeah.
You can talk me out of that and tell me I'm crazy, but that's just the way I see it because that's how important talent at the highest level is.
We can tell you you're crazy, but we can't talk you out of that.
Yeah. All right. All right. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Kevin. Thank you to McMahon. McMahon, I feel like by the time we talk next week, there's going to be a lot more Harden stuff, even though he may not even be in practice. It's just
I feel like my beard will be fully gray by then.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great rest of your week. We'll talk to you soon.
Adios, amigos.